The debate over changes to Wisconsin's livestock siting rules is on hold after the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection decided not to move forward with them. The proposed changes were about how far farms had to be set back from neighbors and how they managed things like odors and runoff. But another sticking point to come out of the debate was Wisconsin's right to farm law. Rusty Rumley is a senior staff attorney with the National Agricultural Law Center. He's an expert on right to farm laws nationwide. Rusty, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Glad to be here.
Well, in our local news over the last couple of weeks, this phrase right to farm a law came out a lot. It might have surprised a lot of people. What in general does it mean to have a right to farm law in a state?
So, Rob, what a right to farm law typically does is if a farm is sued for a nuisance action, it provides a type of defense that the farm could use in those types of circumstances. So it would be, there's an old common law doctrine called coming to the nuisance. And basically what it means is if you move next to something that could be considered to be a nuisance, you know, what are your rights going forward? Should the pre-existing use be allowed to continue, or should the pre-existing use be curtailed in some manner? And what right to farm statutes do was, they were passed late 70s, early 80s, and they were trying to address that very issue when it came to farming operations.
So the idea is if I move, say, from the city to the country to enjoy the fresh air and I move next to a farm, it makes it difficult for me to sue based on the smell of a farm next door, which shouldn't have been a surprise to me. That's the basic concept these were passed for?
That's the basic concept, yeah. They're trying to preserve farmland. At 70s and the 80s, you start seeing urban centers start vacating. You start seeing more of the urban sprawl. This was usually meant to protect that loss of that valuable farmland in that surrounding areas around municipalities.
I understand every state has some version of this, but is there a lot of variation from state to state?
There's a significant amount of variation from state to state. It generally depends on how prevalent agriculture is to your state's economy, on how strong your right to farm statute is. So the strength can vary from fairly weak all the way up to very protective.
And big picture, how does Wisconsin stack up compared to the rest of the country? Obviously, we have a fairly important agricultural sector here.
Wisconsin's in the middle, probably in the lower half of the middle. There are some protections that it provides that are fairly strong, but there are, you know, exceptions to it as well. So it falls in the center range.
What kind of exceptions do stand out to you when you look at Wisconsin's right to farm law?
So one of the Wisconsin is one of those states that requires the farming operation to be there first. Some states have done away with that requirement and just said if a farm has been in operation for a certain period of time, 1, 2, 3 years, et cetera, and they're substantially unchanged, then the farm will be protected. So Wisconsin requires the farmer to be there first, which is more of a traditional version of right to farm. So that's a little bit weaker than some of the other states. But then they've got other provisions that take up some slack.
I understand Wisconsin's law came up after a state Supreme Court case, State of Wisconsin versus Quality Egg Farm. And I guess for people around the country, this got some attention at the time.
This was one of those cases. There's always been, as more and more people moved out of rural areas, one of the driving forces for these laws was the fact that as people moved away, there was less understanding of agriculture. And then you had this coming to the nuisance defense, but what it is it was always left to the discretion of the judge whether or not they wanted to apply it. So this was the right to farm statutes were meant to streamline the process and try to create steps. So, you know, if you meet these factors, right to farm protection applies. And if you don't meet one of these factors, then you're not entitled to the protection. So this was one of those cases that, you know, started this interest in the right to farm. But there was a couple of states that had already had right to farm statutes before this case, I believe.
Talking to Rusty Rumley, senior staff attorney with the National Agricultural Law Center. We're talking about right to farm laws. Every state has some version of them. We're talking about how they work and how they work here in Wisconsin. Rusty, one point where things get controversial is, okay, the farm was already there when I move next door to it. Everything's all well and good. But then the farm changes operation. They switch from, I don't know, growing corn to having livestock, or from low-density livestock to a lot more livestock. How do the laws work in those kind of cases?
It depends on your state's law. So Wisconsin doesn't have anything that addresses it specifically. But other states, like Minnesota, has limitations on the number of livestock you can have before you lose protection. In some cases, other states will require additional requirements for livestock operations. So a lot of them will have certain pollution controls or certain setback requirements, and that you have to be in compliance with those in order to be protected by the right to farm. So it really just depends on what your state chose to put into their right to farm statute as far as limitations go.
And how, flesh that out a little bit in Wisconsin. What, how does that work here with that? The farm was already there, but it changed operation.
So in Wisconsin, they don't really have anything on that substantial change language. They do have stuff in there allowing for zoning, though. So, I mean, if their farm is located in an area close enough to a town, or if you have a county government that's interested in zoning, they can take steps to address whether that's a livestock operation or any other types of farms. I mean, in Wisconsin, there's several cases involving cranberry bogs as well. So these cases tend to resemble more of what types of agriculture you have in your state. So, you know, cranberry bogs are not a very typical situation for most other states out there, but it's something that's unique to Wisconsin.
Now, in practical terms, are there often cases where a farmer has to invoke this right to farm defense, or does it end up working as a deterrent, saying, yeah, don't even bother filing a suit on these nuisance grounds unless you really have something that exceeds the protections under the law?
Typically, it can be both. This is really difficult to tell how much of a preventative measure they have, because there's no way to go out there and gather the data on how many cases weren't filed or how many cases were dismissed before they ever went to a final verdict. So that's something that we've struggled with over the years, is to see just how much impact these statutes really have. I mean, Wisconsin has five or six cases over 30 years. And that's a
not very
what
often
got right now. Yeah, I mean, that's cases that have gone all the way through the trial, and then they have to be appealed up to the state appellate court, and they have to go all the way to a final decision at the state appellate court, and then they're reported. So it's really difficult to say, well, how many of these cases weren't appealed, or how many of these cases were settled.
Gotcha.
There's no statistics on that, so there's no way to tell.
Now, one concern people have is with the concentration of a lot of the livestock industry, larger scale, denser livestock farms. Some people call them CAFOs. As people are protesting that and challenging these, is that running up against these right to farm laws and leading maybe into some gray areas in those laws?
It can, depending upon the state statute. Some of them specifically address CAFOs in the laws. They either limit the amount of protections or they put additional requirements on them. Other states where the laws haven't been changed as much, they may not reflect those types of situations. So it really depends on the given state.
As we mentioned, every state has some version of a right to farm law. Do we see states going back and revisiting and modifying them over the years, or do they kind of fire and forget? They pass it and then leave it standing?
Oh, no, absolutely. These things get modified over the years. Some states, there's been four or five states that have changed their laws this past year.
Really?
So, yeah, these things can change. Some states will change it more frequently than others. Some states, they passed it early on, and then they may have changed it once or twice in the 30 or 40 years that it's been on the books. But, yeah, these things can change. And typically, they change when a big case comes down.
Are there trends in the kind of changes states make when they revisit these laws?
So, give you an example. One of the changes that has been prevalent this year, there was a series of cases out of North Carolina dealing with hog farms, and some of the verdicts in those cases were surprisingly large. I think there's a series of 26 cases. They've had 5 trials so far, and the verdicts have been in excess of $550 million combined. So some of the states have gone back and put damage caps, you know, capping it at the fair market value of the property, since nuisance is more of a property crime. You know, you're not a property tort. You are interfering with someone's use and enjoyment of their property, and you're devaluing their property. So there have been some states going back and putting damage caps on their particular laws, but that's been one of the changes from this year.
Interesting. As we wrap up, what's on the frontier of right to farm laws? What are you watching for maybe the trends in 2020?
We're looking to see if there's going to be any more damage caps out there. And then the other thing is going to be, how do people deal with changes in agriculture? So there is being more concentration out there. How do states handle that going forward? Is it something they wish to address? Is it something that they're going to leave their right to farm law mainly silent on? So that's one of the areas that we're watching going forward.
Rusty, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Mm-hmm. Glad to be here.
That's Rusty Rumley, senior staff attorney with the National Agricultural Law Center. He was with us today to explain how Wisconsin's right to farm law works and give us some background on why laws like it have cropped up in all 50 states around the country.